Hello and welcome back. Hey, this is the Bringing It All Back Home podcast. And this is Charles. Hello. Delivering a new podcast on a Sunday morning here in South Jersey. Sunday morning in July. So we've got the humidity cranked up just a little extra, which is always nice. Anyhow, yeah, guys, I've got two things I want to touch on for today's episode. Kind of a sequel to the last episode, which is the first rental that arrived from Lens Rentals and my results of the first roll developing with Perceptol. So, yeah. Let me start with the most exciting stuff, really. That is this lens that I rented from Lens Rentals. Number one, just as an aside, I'm not here to shill for any company, but these guys are pretty amazing. I don't know what it is, but every once in a while you'll do a rental with them and they'll just give you like two extra free days. So my rental was supposed to be pretty much Monday through, I guess, Wednesday. You know, it was a 3-day rental, supposed to be delivered Monday, and then technically I would have a full Tuesday, Wednesday, and making sure to put it back in the FedEx delivery truck or what have you by Thursday. So yeah, that was the way the agreement was on my rental. Rental duration 3 days, arrives by July 10th, ship back by July 13th. So what do those guys do, or those folks at Lens Rentals? They deliver it to me on July 8th for free, you know, for just no extra charge. So basically I have an entire weekend with this lens, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that I did not did not pay for. Where do you find that? You know what I mean? Where do you find a company that basically just gives you double what you paid for? So again, I paid for 3 days. Essentially, I'm getting a 6-day rental. Huge shout out to those guys. It really did arrive Friday. And yesterday, Saturday morning, I was able to run outside early before I went to work and just, get it on my Sony camera and just start taking some shots. So let me set up the lens a little bit more accurately for you in case you're not familiar. This is known as the Sony FE 50. So this is the 50 version of it. 1.2 GM. The blurb from Lens Rentals. Of course, this is fast, great for X, Y, and Z. Designed as part of the G Master line. And it's supposedly got advanced optics, 10 group, 14 element optical design. 3 extreme spherical elements and 1 standard spherical elements to reduce the aberrations, producing sharp, clear, color accurate images. Going to talk about the color in a little bit too. And it's got nano coating, what they call AR coating, to help combat reflections and flare and ghosting. Does a nice job with autofocus, has a pretty high quality build. Supposedly this is dust and moisture resistant when it comes to the sealing. All metal barrel, rubberized manual focus ring. And if you did decide to purchase this, or if this was on your wish list, it's going to include the lens. It's going to include a hood, unlike Voigtlander, who doesn't include hoods, or even Zeiss. A lot of the Zeiss lenses don't include a hood. This does include a hood. And the filter is a good old 72 millimeter, so not too crazy on the filter size. Okay, so it's in my hands, And, you know, Sony's not the only one out there doing these these updated, you know, 2020 and newer 1.2 lenses. I have talked a bit about my first experience when I shot with the Nikon version. Their 50 1.2, kind of like, you know, what I thought at the time was like their show-off lens because it was so expensive. And that guy was a little bit bigger in the sense it's a longer lens and a little bit heavier. Yeah. So one thing I was immediately impressed with, it really did live up to the fact that it was lighter. It's a lighter lens. It technically is coming in under 1.7 pounds. The length is 4 inches or so, 4.3 inches. I don't know if that's with the hood or not. Popped that sucker on and began to step into the future. So for me, stepping into the future, which is just so weird. It's a little weird. I have had this Sony high resolution version of the A7, the A7 R series, step back a generation or two to hopefully find a half decent deal on the eBays. And I do have the A7 R3. I've had this camera now only paired with a manual focus Zeiss lens, 100% manual focus lens. And I'm like, yeah, that was cool. I kind of like the fact that I bought that lens and use it manual focus because I just figured, well, why else would I have a wide angle lens other than to do landscape? And when do I ever need the type of landscape that I do? When would I ever need autofocus? I really don't. With the focus peaking on these high-end mirrorless cameras now, it's kind of fun. It does give you another perspective on how you're in focus. So here I am, you know, it's yesterday morning, and I've got my camera, which I'm, you know, getting familiar with. I'm still not as comfortable with it as my old Nikons, and I've got autofocus, and I've got, eye detection. So I'm just going through the camera, and I'm exploring this area, these autofocus modes, that I have not explored before, you know. So I did a little tiny bit of YouTubing before I jumped out into the streets, as it were. You know, I kind of just figured I would go in and you know, get a little bit ahead of the heads up on the autofocus stuff, and that just kind of keeps changing with the newer models. I believe there's a type of autofocus tracking, which is more a feature on, say, the A7 R4 and, of course, the A7 R5. I was pretty much going into the settings there and just exploring, like, hey, and this is the center version of it. This is the zone. This is the point large, medium, small, the essentially going through that stuff. You know, it's neither here nor there. I still have time. I still have a lens, you know, for a couple more days where I'm going to try to get somebody, hopefully from work or maybe on my next day off, which is Wednesday, to possibly give me what resembles a photo shoot. And I can really see how many keepers I have. But here's the takeaway. I was blown away by renting the Nikon version, the 50 1.2 from Nikon, their Z version. And I am just as blown away by this Sony version. Just like blown away. You know, there's something about this combination. And I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself because I did kind of rave about this a ways back when I talked about that shoot with the Nikon. But I don't want to sound in any way like a 1.2 snob, you know, which I think you tend to get that from the collectors out there, you know, raving about their manual focus 1.2s and the glory days of this version of a 60s 1.2 or that version of a, you know, whatever it was, Zeiss or Leica. No, not talking about that at all. I'm talking about the stuff right now. right here, right now. You know, what makes photography really exciting in 2023? This is it. You know, this is one of the pillars of what's out there and very, very exciting. Because 1.2 is nothing new. You know, if you wanted to do 1.2 in the past, you know, you had the 1.2 versions that would work with an autofocus system based on the earlier DSLRs. Of course, as I mentioned, you've had 1.2 as a manual focus, but the combination of the last 2 or 3 years, or maybe let's say the last 5 years, of the face and eye detection, particularly Sony, this is one of the things they do well. They do it well. They're not the only ones. It sounds like Canon is completely or almost completely caught up on some of their higher-end mirrorless. Nikon is doing a great job on their top-of-the-line stuff right now. But Sony, it just seems like it kicks ass when it comes to the speed and the accuracy of the different modes of human as well as animal eye detection. Combine that with a sliver of depth of field, and it's, to use a cliche word, but it seems extremely true here, it is magical. That was the first sensation that popped into my barely had half a cup of coffee brain yesterday morning as I just started taking true test shots with the lens. You know, was there something magical here? There really is. You know, I even did something I would absolutely never do. After I went to a couple of my typical places where I test out, usually test out new lenses or test out new film, I walked to the sidewalk of the avenue where I'm on here, down beach, and I just waited for cyclists to come by. And I religiously just kept my camera on f.12. And I just kind of like got the person on the bike heading toward me into the frame and saw the eye detection and the face detection lock in. And I just was like, click, 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 click. And then I got the photos instantly, of course. And I'm thinking, is it me or is this like ridiculously in focus? And that's still jaw-dropping. Just jaw-dropping that you're getting something that's moving, coming towards you, and the focus is completely nailed. And I don't mean like it's just acceptable focus. I mean like it's really in focus, So as I'm speaking right now, I do have some of the shots right up in front of me. Here it is. Here's the cyclist coming towards me. And I'm zooming in. I'm going to go in, I don't know, let's see, 300%. And, this is a relatively big RAW file. But, it has the depth of field, of course, at 1.2. So it's not intending to have him, this cyclist completely in focus. It's going to find that certain depth of field. But where it found it, it looks terrific. And, this is a moving subject. Anyhow, one of the things that really struck me about 1.2 is it was not a perfect morning for photography. The light was pretty meh, it was neither here nor there. It did not have the beauty of early morning light because it was so overcast. And near the building where I live, somebody's very, very rusty old cheap bike was just, it's one of those bikes that like nobody would want to steal, So I think it may have been locked up, but with a really cheap lock, anybody, I'm sure if it had any interest in it, if it had any value, it would not be there. But yeah, really old cheap bike with no value and a very interesting looking basket attached to the front handlebars that had been completely rusted out. So I'm like, here's an interesting subject. So I line up my shot on my 50 millimeter. I'm at 1.2. And this is where it was interesting. This is where I kind of ended up going with the zone focus points because the nearest part of the basket, which is where I was aiming to get. I was aiming to get like the corner closest to me where the basket was nice and rusty, but very not so far away from it was another side of the basket, and it wasn't sure which side to use, you know? So I switched it to the zone, and I could see this kind of like a parallel framing, as it were, come through, and I'm like, okay, you're in, right? So I'm looking at it right now at 300% zoomed in on my Lightroom here, and it's so interesting because it's not about the bokeh. It's more just about what is the point of this photo, you know? And so what comes out of this photo is just here's a little bit of rust on a basket. You know, that basket that's used on a bicycle, of course. So the first thing your eye goes to is like where these lines intersect with the orange rust. And then you look around and you're like, okay, yeah. So there's, and in the background toward the right, in the background leading away from it, there seem to be some bicycles here, but it's so blurred out because, again, the depth of field is so shallow. It becomes more abstract, of course. And that's where, yeah, that's where part of the magic lies in this camera is that if you're not necessarily getting all of the right ingredients, you don't have any great sunlight, you don't even really have a particularly interesting subject, getting that, I guess you could say it's almost like going, it's like getting a kind of macro spark of interest, you know, or micro if you were Nikon, you know, is without literally taking a macro shot. You know, you can just isolate that one little section of the photo and let the depth of field stuff happen. You know, let that blur do its magic. So, yeah, that's my rant about the Sony pros. Everything about this lens is fantastic. It is lighter than the Nikon. I think when I was doing the research, I believe this is the lightest 1.2 lens out there. That's, you know, part of the current batch. You know, this is the, we're talking current. We're not talking retro lenses here. This is one of the current ones with the killer autofocus. But yeah, I believe between Sony and Canon and Nikon, who else? Am I missing somebody? I don't know. I don't think, does Fuji do a 1.2? I don't know if they do. Yeah, between the three big guys, I believe this is definitely the lightest, and the autofocus is superb. Yeah, so it delivers, and I haven't even begun to really put this thing to the test. I, again, walked around on a morning with not so great lighting and was blown away by just some of the test shots that I took. Why don't I rush out right now and purchase this lens? Well, you know, it would make sense. I am a 50 lover, without a doubt. You know, there's 50 ways to find easy composition. For me, at least, I find the 50 is absolutely the easiest way for me to line things up. Is it the perfect lens for every shot? Nope, not at all. But it is, it's the one that always works for me. I don't have to reset my brain in any way to compose for a 50. So if I type this in, again, Sony FE 50 1.2 GM, this guy is listing at B&H for $2,000. You know, it's 1998. So maybe, you know, when we kick into better part of the season when you start seeing deals on gear, but lenses are always kind of, I don't know, you know, lenses, I don't know, do they really go on sale? I mean, obviously cameras, Sony cameras and Nikon cameras and Canons, they all tend to go on sale as we get into the fall. As you approach the holiday season, it's quite normal to see at least 100, if not more, off of those cameras. Whether or not the lenses, you know, get a discount, I don't know. But yeah, right now you're looking at $2,000 for this guy. And let me see if I just type in the 51.2 into B&H. I'm just kind of curious, what is going to come up? What's the competition here? So, okay, so the Canon version, what they call their RF 1.2L lens, that's $300 more. So that's $2,300. Sony, again, is $2,000. And the Nikkor seems to have, the Nikon is on sale right now. Yeah, the Nikon's on sale. So the Nikon normally is $2,100. And right now that is on sale for $1,896. So essentially $1,900. So I guess that answers my question. Sometimes they do go on sale. Yeah. But normally this is the lowest cost of the three. So just to recap, Canon $2,300. Normally Nikon $2,100. And the Sony, at $2,000. So yeah, I'm gonna click on add to compare just to kind of see what those guys are. I'm gonna compare these three, and let's take a look at the weight. So yeah, where I started with the one I'm renting, the Sony, 1.7 pounds. Now check this out compared to the Nikon. The Nikon is 2.4. You can really hear the difference if I describe it in grams. So the Sony is 778 grams. The Nikon is 1,000. It's 1,090 grams. So almost 1,100 versus 780. Canon's a little bit heavier than the Sony. It's 2.9 pounds or 950 grams. So yeah, Sony is the lightest of the bunch. It has 11 rounded blades versus 9 on the Nikon and 10 on the Canon. And it also has the smallest filter size. Kind of give you an idea how bulky this thing is. The filter size on the Sony is 72. Filter size on the Canon is 77. Filter size on the Nikon is 82. I mean, that thing is, it's a big freaking lens. Yeah. In terms of the sizing, I believe the Canon sticks out almost the same length as the Sony. Sony, again, is described as 4.3 inches in length. Canon's 4.2.5. So technically, they're about the same as, and yeah, the Nikkor Z is almost 6 inches down the barrel, you know? So that thing's 5.9 inches long. Okay, so that's a little bit about the comparison. So no matter what you decide on, no matter which of these three, unless you're rich, unless you just won the lottery, or you know, you just have this burning desire to go through thousands and thousands of dollars every year on your gear, what's going to, of course, wake you up at 3 a.m. going, what did I just do? Is that this is still to some degree a specialty lens. You know, with magic comes, I don't know, what's the right word? With magic does not come responsibility. With magic comes irresponsibility. You know, with magic comes delusional thinking. Yeah, you have to kind of embrace that delusional thinking if you're going to go all out. And, you know, it's one thing to say, I'm going to treat myself to, you know, a holiday. I'm going to treat myself to spending extra on this thing that I love. How much extra? You know, do you spend an extra $100 or two to get that incredible meal? Do you spend an extra $1,000 or two to get that incredible holiday? You know, how much extra do you spend on that car you're looking for? Or if you're more like me, where none of those things are a reality, I'm kind of lucky enough to have the money to at least explore these ideas, but I don't have too much saved, and I'm working retail to give you an idea. I'm not a high-end earner, never have been. I spent many a year in my 20s and early 30s living below the poverty line. In my wannabe artistic years, you know, where it was cool to at least live like a writer. Getting published was a whole nother story. Anyhow, getting back to the pros and cons, if you can live with the price of this lens, I just think it's an absolute killer. It's a killer lens. And to be honest, as much as I don't shoot digital much anymore, I still find more value in something like this. So let's say you do get it on sale, if it ever comes on sale. Or you find an incredible used copy for maybe $1,700 or $1,800. I still think that $1,700 or $1,800 is far more justifiable for the pleasure and the accuracy and the incredible gifts it's going to give than a lot of the high-end collector costs that some of these film cameras are going for, you know? So, and I know I'm not the only one, you know, just on the YouTube channel of Willem Verbeck, he's recently talked about how he tried to go the cheaper way into buying a Leica, went through a series of Voigtlander built, cameras, the Bessa series, and they all crapped out on him, one after another. And he's like, you know, if I had just saved my money and bought an M6, I probably would have spent less than what I did on these Bessas that died on them, plus the hopeless repairs he tried to get done on them as well. But he's made a really good point in the video. And if you want to see what I'm talking about, just check out Willem's latest video about talking about the Leica CL series camera I've been familiar with for quite a while. But basically the point he gets to is that for an everyday camera, 35mm everyday camera, for like an all-purpose everyday, this is going to be a camera I take with me all the time, he couldn't justify spending over $2,000, you know, and he's got a lot of fancy cameras. He really does, you know, like he's got gear, digital, because he shoots professionally. He gets a lot of stuff shot for magazines now. He has gear, of course, to shoot his videos. He has some very, very nice and not cheap medium format stuff beyond just the RZ67s. It appears he's using the Mamiya 7 or 7.2. He's got gear that's up there. But he's making a really good point. Like the film camera that you're just basically walking around with every day, if just the body alone costs over $2,000, doesn't that become kind of prohibitive? You know what I mean? Like, is that the same camera that you're going to want to just throw in your bag and get on the road with, and throw in your bag and get on the road with? You know what I mean? But that's a whole other subject. That's a little bit of a tangent there. But basically, to sum up, I absolutely love this lens. If this lens was, say, $1,299, you know, I would absolutely be doing every single thing I could to purchase it. Meaning, like, I'd be like, okay, let me find three things I need to sell, you know, and I would. I would be like, I'm not using this camera, I'm not using that lens so much. Or I would line it up with tax season return time. You know, if it was around $1,200 or $1,300, you could break it down into sizable chunks. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I can sell off enough X, Y, and Z to cough up $400 here. You know, and then if I add in some tax return money in February, there's another X amount there. And who knows? You know, like, you could justify it. You really could, I think, if it was closer to $1,000. But when it's $2,000 for a single lens, you know, that's not going to be the best for landscape, really. You know, like 50s, not quite. You can. My first 2 years of shooting digital, I have quite a few landscapes because all I had was a 50. But yeah, you kind of outgrow that, you know. You know, once you've gotten a taste of it, the equivalent of 28, let alone the equivalent of 24 or 20, or what I'm currently using, a 21, you kind of associate landscape with a little bit extra room and not a 50. So, yeah, I don't know. All I know is I absolutely love this lens. I'm completely sold on it. And who knows, you know, if I suddenly find I have an extra $1,000 from something, and then I sell off a couple of things, maybe I could justify it. Or maybe this is just going to become my rental. You know, maybe I'm just going to have to like, you know, like, cause this was a good deal. Like, I think it was a, you know, it was a 15 or 20. No, I think it was a 20% off. No, 15% off the rental. Again, I got super lucky by getting 6 days out of the rental instead of three. And who knows? Maybe I'll just rent it out a couple more times this year, or at least two more times. Anyhow, that's my rave about the lens. Love the 1.2. Is the 1.2 a magical lens? Yes. In my opinion, it is. This could be the one thing that could bring me back to shooting digital more often. Speaking of which, color. So what I thought I would do, which I'm really surprised I haven't done on the landscape stuff, was, well, let me get out my old color bright thingamajig. You know, do you guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I'm sorry. What I was trying to say was the X-Rite Color Checker Passport. Which I sort of condensed to Color Bright, you know, X-Rite Color Checker Passport. Yeah, that's a super, super cool tool. I purchased this thing ages ago, like probably at least 10 years. Mine still looks really, really well, like it's never, barely ever been used. But yeah, I threw a couple of tests with that X-Rite into my Lightroom using the new rented lens, and I was shocked at how much better the colors looked with that color profile. I don't know what's going on with Sony's RAW files, but I was astonished at how different some of the most basic strong colors were, especially the blues. I don't know why, like the blues were coming out, just such a huge shift. So yeah, I now have at least two different, you know, quick tools in my my Lightroom tool shed, you know, the so-called profile. So I did a Sony F1.2 outside with the lens. I did a Sony F1.2 inside light. And I really liked it. I really, really like it. So I think like that has solved a problem. Part of me was always thinking like, is there a thing with Sony colors that I should know about? No, it's super, super easy. Just calibrate your lens in a couple of different conditions. Obviously, if you're doing a photo shoot with a flash, you'd want to calibrate it again. And that should get you pretty darn close to where you want to be. So yeah, huge shout out for that. If you haven't tried the X-Rite calibration thingy, how much does that go for? This is really expensive now. Holy crap. It's going for $120. I know I didn't pay anything like that when I bought it. In fact, I wonder if I could still... Holy cow. It was 10 years ago, or just about 2014. Bought it off of Amazon. Well, it wasn't cheap back then. It was $82. $82. 9 years ago, buying it off of Amazon. And now it's going for $120. It's the exact same thing. Go figure. That's a bit confusing. You'd think the price would go down a little bit. But no, there we go. So a little bit about the color checker, especially for Sony cameras. Definitely recommend it. But yeah, I want to wrap up. The Perceptol was, how can I describe it? The Perceptol was okay. You know, I got a roll right here. I shot this using some Leica stuff, Leica glass, you know, the 40 Kron, the Summicron C. I guess the difference I'm seeing is there is definitely more of an edge to the fine grain, if that makes any sense. You know, so, but it's weird. It's not like, and this lens does have micro contrast pretty well. It's odd. It's like I shot, you know, very slow film. Believe right? Didn't I shoot this with was this the T-Max? This was shot with the T-Max. This was shot with the 50. Yeah, no, this was shot with Pan F. And I'm not sold on the developer. To be totally honest, I think it does a nice job with sharpness, you know, but I kind of miss the overall look of D76, you know, in my case, the Ilford ID11. So yeah, it was interesting test. The development times are a bit absurd. They're practically double what you would do with D76. I mean, like, if I was cooking the stuff up at very, very warm temperatures, so I was looking for the times, through Massive Dev, appropriate to 25C. And I still came in at 10 minutes. So, yeah. Not really a thumbs down, but definitely not a thumbs up. I don't think I'm in any rush to finish my extra, what do I have? I guess another 500 milliliters or 750 milliliters of Perceptol. I'll give it another go. You know, and maybe try it with a different film. You know, maybe it looks a little bit better with with like a 100 speed tea grain. You know, maybe that's where it finally comes together. I did get some recent T-Max 100. So that could be one good wrap-up test to see if I give it another chance. You know, I've my favorite way of using T-Max 100 is you can't go wrong with a Rodinal stand. I've had incredible success with that. You can't go wrong with ID11 with T-Max 100. So it's kind of an indestructible film. But yeah, I'd like to see if there's any noticeable difference using that with Perceptol. But yeah, I don't think you need to rush out and grab it. Anyhow, that's the wrap for today. Got another rental coming in next week. The spherical Voigtlander 50, which I'm really, really curious about to see where that goes, and especially see how it compares with the best glass I have when it comes to, I guess, what it's advertising. This is supposed to be a crazy sharp, high micro contrast lens. I want to see how it compares with the Zeiss Planar that I have for the CY stuff, how it compares with the 40 millimeter Kron, even my Nikkor F2, which when I go back and look at that thing, that's a little gem as well. It's a pretty darn sharp lens. So yeah, got some comparisons to make next week. Anyhow, hope you guys are doing well. Thanks again for tuning in. You can always reach out for me, Charles Kirschblatt, on Twitter and on Facebook and on Instagram. I'm CWK Photo. I tried out Thread. And then there's nothing wrong with trying out Thread, because who isn't sick of the way Twitter's become? But yeah, I was just bombarded with a feed that would not exclude. It felt very much like what I imagine a TikTok feed to be, only worse. I don't do TikTok at all, but yeah, the feed was like, here's what J-Lo has to say, and here's what whatever, like all these blue checked pseudo celebrities. Not to say J-Lo's not a pseudo celebrity, but you know what I mean? All these people, like, why would I care what they have to say in any way? So it just seemed like a flood of people with blue checks, you know, scroll after scroll after scroll. Then I finally see somebody I'm actually following, and then two or three more scrolls of people I would never want to have any interest in what they're saying. So yeah, I kind of deleted Thread. Until I hear that they give you the option to only see who you're following, that would be sweet. Because, it would be fun to start over. Anyhow, hope you guys will tune in again. Thanks one more time for listening to the podcast. And a big shout out to everybody around the world who is checking in. And hope you have a good weekend.